Major Hun, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was any background of military service in your family?
No, apart from the normal, my father and his brothers were called up in the First World War and they just did their service. There was no military background across their family.
Not professional?
No.
But what was your father then when he was not serving?
He was an engineer. Ship's engineer.
Ship's engineer? Mm. So he was at sea?
No, in docks, working on the boats. Yeah, when they came in.
Oh, right, so he was a shipyard engineer.
That's right. Yeah.
How was it then that you decided to join the army?
Well, when I was 14, 15, 16, I had a very good friend. And, well, there were three very good friends. We used to go to church together and always meet that. And one day, when I was 17, we went round from one of our friends and my mother said, oh, he's joined the army. And we were surprised because he hadn't told us, and we were a little bit upset. And he came home for Christmas Eve. This was in 1936, Christmas 36. And he was in 12th Army uniform. And he looked very smart. He had his breeches cut, he seemed that he looked really good. He was a smart looking man. And he tried to persuade Bill Horn, who was our other friend, to join. And we said, no, we're not interested in joining the army. We hadn't thought about it. And I said to him, what do you do all day? He said, well, in the mornings, we drive armored cars over Salisbury Plain. And I always dreamed of Salisbury Plain being a beautiful place to see. And and in the afternoon, we'd be dressed like this in our breeches and spurs, and the sergeant would come along and say, come on, I want you to break in the Wild Horse. And you'd get on this horse and you'd ride across the Salisbury Plain. My word, this seems wonderful. So Bill Bourne and I said, all right, we'll join. So we went to Norwich, the nearest recruiting centre.
But, sorry, where were you living then?
In Yarmouth.
Oh, Yarmouth.
Yeah. And we went to Norwich and they kept me there a week. Both of us had a week trying to persuade us to join the North Regiment.
What age were you at that
17.
Time?
17. Yeah. So I said, no, if I can't join 12 hours, I'm going home. I didn't want to. You know, 12 hours of regiment, I wanted. They kept me a week trying to twist my arm. I said, no. So they said, right. So they signed me on, and I said I was 18. And in fact, I got away with it. And we arrived at Tidworth, where the regiment was. So.
Had you had any previous military training? Had you been in a cadet corps at school or anything like that? Had you been in the scouts?
No. I used to do lots of sport. I was working in the scouts.
Before this decision to join the army, had you had any idea about what you wanted to do?
Not particularly, no.
So it was
I didn't think I would want to stay in the army because I didn't see a lot about it there, but I hadn't made up my mind what I wanted to do, so this came out.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Well, no, I didn't find out till afterwards, when I got to the regiment, that there was no driving armoured cars over the Salisbury Plain, there were no wild horses to say. And Donald Gray, our friend, he got 5 shillings each for us for recruiting us, and we got an extra 4 or 5 days leave out of it. So really, he conned us. But I was pleased he did do it.
What arguments did they use when they were trying to persuade you to give up your ambitions for the cavalry and join the Norfolks?
Well, it's your county regiment. You know, you have more friends here. Oh, and your teeth are not good enough. You need 2 fillings at the back. I mean, not really nothing wrong with your teeth at all. A couple of fillings at the back, because when you're up in a cavalry regiment, you're so far forward. And if you have toothache, then all this is recruiting something of trying to any excuse.
So you stayed firmly committed to joining the cavalry?
The 12th Lancers.
And what was the process of induction then when you arrived? Did you arrive at the regiment directly for basic training?
Yes, you arrived and you were put up all recruits in one bag. And I was sent to Boots Robin. And the first thing they issued your kit, first of all, they took you, gave you your kit. And then they gave me my hat. I said, oh, it's not big enough. And the quartermaster there said, it will be when you get your hair cut. And so then they took me to the barbers and off came all my golden locks and the hat fitted. And
were you still in service dress at that time?
Civilian dress?
No, the uniform, was it service dress?
Oh, service dress, yes.
So it was still the Norfolk jacket and the breeches and the puttees?
That's right, yes.
What did you think of that uniform?
It looked very smart. It was comfortable.
Do you think it was a practical?
Not really, not for armoured cars. But we never used it in armoured cars. We had brown overalls that we had to buy. You got some issue, but when they got dirty, you had to. They weren't expensive, but they looked very smart. We didn't have brown overalls.
What about the boots, the footwear, which is so
boots.
Important to a soldier?
Yeah, boots. Well, again, to get a little bit of getting used to, because I hadn't been used to shoes all my life, you see. But eventually, when they were working in, they were comfortable. Yeah. And they also had to be very, very highly polished. Yeah. And then when we were issued our kit, there were a lot of really old soldiers there who had just come back from Egypt, you know, salt of the earth, but they were very, very sharp, and if they got some innocent, you know, if they could put one over on them, they would, being a recruit. And so I arrived, and I had a nice overcoat, had some lovely shoes, and they came on and said, well, you won't be able to wear that overcoat, you know, so I'll buy it off, I'll give you 2 shillings for some. Right, and then that suit, you can't wear that. And the shoes, you know, you can't wear that. And everything that went green like that. And I was very innocent, very trusting too. And then I got all my kit issued, actually. And army bases, you love the thick side. I said, oh, I didn't wear them. I've got my own. I'll have them, the army. And there was army, so there were the shorts. Oh, I don't know, I've got my own underwear. I'll have them. All this shaving brush. Oh, I don't shave. I'll have it. Razor. All my kit was all going. But well, I don't need it until that month. And because at the end of the month, there's a kitchen section when everything is laid out. The S and S and my braces. Oh, I've got these. And that. Everything that I didn't know that I had to pay for at that point. No, but
you've been picked clean.
I had, but that was the way, right? That taught you something. But those same people, they wouldn't steal anything off you. They weren't dishonest about it. But I said, here you are, and they took it.
Did the other recruits suffer the same fate of being?
Some of them sort of said, no, I'll keep this or whatever. It's a way of learning. And you were formed into a troop.
This is the recruit.
That's recruits, the recruit troop.
How many of you were there when you arrived in your draft?
About 24, roughly, in a troop. And then you went up and you kept together right the way through your basic training. And you went on the square and you did your arms drill, the rifle drill, and I think it lasted near enough 3 months until you were passed out off the square by one else in a big way and having an operation.
Apart from drilling, what else were you doing during this period of basic training?
Rifle training.
Shooting?
Yes. Mm. You had education. You had to sit your third class education, second class education. And that was all done either in the afternoon or in the evening in some cases. And once you passed your second class education, you got extra money. You got 3p a day or 3p a day That's when I started. It was 2 shillings a day, and that's the basic
basic pay.
Basic pay. Mm.
What was in the education? Can you remember what you did?
Oh, there was map reading was most important. History, yeah. Basic English and maths.
Was the history general? Was it the history of the regiment? The
regiment mainly, but they brought in some of the other history, not too far back, mainly military history.
So it was the regiment and its background,
right,
life and times of the regiment.
That's right, yes.
Who actually taught you that history?
There was a sergeant in, who was qualified as a teacher, who the same one who did it all the time.
Was
there
he
was an education corps out there.
They weren't. All right. Mm-hmm. So he was a lancer who'd been trained
that's
to do
right,
this.
Yes. Mm. Later, he took sergeant and got an MM.
You mentioned English. Was that simply reading and writing?
That's right, yes. Mm. You had to sort of write an essay and things like that. Yeah.
How did the standard they were requiring for English and mathematics compare with that you'd done at school? Was it?
Much the same.
Much the same.
I found it quite easy. I mean, I got my third in the first week, I think, and my second about couple of months later when you were fitted onto the course to do it. So I found it fairly easy, but there's a lot of people who, you know, found it difficult.
And what was the maths you were doing? Do you remember what was in that?
Just all the sort of mental arithmetic and what of it.
Yeah.
You know, you were given certain problems, you know, but nothing too high, nothing, you know, no algebra or anything like that. Straightforward, simple maths, really.
Would it have had practical applications to soldiering, sort of mathematics?
Well, I think it made you think. You
know, yes.
See whether you were alert enough, you know, on the basic right. A man takes 5 hours to do this and that. Mm. And how would you do it? It made you work things out. Mm. And that's what they were, I think, what you're looking for.
Now, the map reading, how was that taught? What do you remember what you...
Mainly, that stage was in the classroom. A compass, bearings, you know, observing and locating different places on the map. Distances, working out from A to B, if you had to take your troop there, or if you were going there, and so on. And then later they would take you and give you tests, and they'd take you to a hill and say, right, identify that church on the map. See, and then you take a bearing on the map. That sort of thing.
Sounds like that was a great practical applicability.
So that was necessary if you're in a cavalry regiment. Map reading was one of the most important things.
Now, with regard to the drill, you mentioned doing rifle drill and shooting. What was the course of musketry like? You know, what sort of ranges were you shooting at?
Oh, 600 yards.
600 yards. Yeah. Was that the maximum range?
More or less what we used to shoot at. And you went through all the safeties and that sort of thing, and then you were taken onto the ranges and shoot. Mm. And then you had your pistol, and you were doing pistol shooting, which really was, we had the old Smith & Wesson. Mm. And the range of that would be about 50 yards that we would have our targets at. Because it wasn't very effective, sort of thing, at a distance, was it? Used to
veer off a bit. Did you think the pistol was a useful weapon?
Not that one. I learned later. One I wouldn't like to have during the Wars of Browning.
The 9mm.
That's right. Mm. But the Smith & Wesson really, well, especially when you came up against the Germans and you saw what they had. Mm.
But on the other hand, the rifle.
Well, we didn't use the rifle, really.
You didn't.
That was part of our training too.
The standard Lee Enfield. Mm. Mm. 303.
Yeah, we had that for drill as well, you see. And as I say, as well as the lance drill. Mm.
But what did you think of the rifle then as a weapon? Did you find it easy to handle and shoot straight with the...
Well, yes, I think... we learned how to use it, but we didn't have any great use for it later. You know, our main weapon was later, was he came onto the Ben Gun and the guns on the Isle of Man.
Now, lance drill. Now, it's always said that it takes much longer to train a lancer than another sort of cavalryman because the lance is simply so cumbersome and difficult to handle.
Well, at bar training, you had to sort of do all your drill and various motions with it, especially parade type things, and then march with it. Instead of having the rifle, you would have the lance. And it was a bit cumbersome, really, and especially for a short person. We got used to doing it.
What sort of shaft was it? Was it a bamboo shaft?
Bamboo, yes, with a base which was chrome.
Yes.
Base on, and the spear. I've got one of them upstairs, actually.
Triangular blade?
Yes, yes.
On the spear, and a ball?
I'm not sure what it is. It came down in a shaft over the bamboo.
Yes.
And then it came up like a spear.
Yeah. Do you have a sling?
Yes, there was a sling.
Leather sling.
Yes, no. Mine code.
Yes. Mm. And bindings.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you suffer any injury as a result of doing lance drill?
No. The only injury we suffered, actually, the whole troop suffered, was the upset with the drill sergeant, whose name was Benny, he used to then take us up onto the railway line that used to feed all the barracks that Tidworth this was. The railway line used to run along the back of the barracks. He'd take us up on that railway line and rifle this hand, left hand, lance in the right hand, held above your head, right, up and down the railway line on the sleepers as punishment.
That's a very awkward length of step, isn't it, between sleepers?
He's squatting down there, up and down, with his hand out, about turning back, up and down. Until we got things right, I think.
Did you do any mounted lance drill?
No. All the officers had horses, but and they used to have a couple of soldiers who were grooms, and you could volunteer to be the officer's servant and second servant, which was the groom. But it didn't appeal to me, so I didn't do that.
When did the regiment mechanise?
They were mechanised when we got there. They had no horses apart from the officers. But we had the Lancaster armoured cars then, which were quite heavy armoured cars with a 0.5 Vickers and 303 Vickers machine cannon.
Both in the turret?
In the turret, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned Benny, the...
Sergeant.
Yeah, tracing up and down the railway line. Mm-hmm. What did you make of military discipline, your first encounter with military discipline?
I accepted it. If you're a soldier, you do as you're told. And I felt that for my own good, if I've done something wrong, that's the punishment you have, and you accept it.
Did you find that everyone had the same attitude as you?
You might get the odd one who's a little bit bossy, but it didn't pay to be, because straight away, if he was in the same troop and he let the troop down, the troop would sort him out, you see. But on the whole, they were all keen and did their best.
Sounds as though the discipline was really a collective thing rather than something imposed from above.
Yes.
Where did these recruits come from? Had they come mainly from the same area or were they from all over the country?
I was from Norfolk, two of us were from Norfolk. A number from Liverpool, a number from Birmingham, a number from Devon. They were all over Britain. There wasn't one recruiting area then, people who wanted.
And how did you get on together? Was it a mixed bag?
Very well. I found there was quite a mixture, of types where they lived and that sort of thing. But they blended in very well. And the great thing that brought a lot of them together was sport.
What kind of sport were you playing?
Well, I used to box. And I used to box.
What weight would you have been?
Featherweight.
You were tiny, were you?
I couldn't get hurt.
But, moved around too fast.
I rarely knocked anybody out. Mostly on points, but I had a good left hand. And altogether, I had about 50 fights in the army. And lost about two. So I was always the regimental champion. And some of these recruits who came, one from Liverpool in particular, who was very good. But he was a lightweight, so I never met up. But I used to do that, so I used to train hard. And early morning I used to go out training, and afternoon in the gym. And in the summer, I used to be a very good cross-country runner. I used to always win the regimental cross-country running, about 7 or 8 miles. I was the regimental miler, regimental 3 miler, and the regimental 880. And occasionally I used to run the 4 mile. So I was always, in my spare time, either boxing in the gym, training in the gym, or on the track. And I used to love it. I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, and I was 100% fit. I really was fit.
What about the official physical training? What did you have to do with that?
You'd go to the gym as part, when you came off the square, perhaps.
Yeah.
You'd have 20 minutes to change, get into shorts and a vest, and go up to the gym where you had a PT instructor who would give you all the vaulting holes, the rope, the bars, all that sort of thing. So, 3 quarters an hour.
What was the emphasis on there? Was it on strength or endurance or agility?
Fitness mainly. Although, I think the agility was over the horse. I used to get that.
Yeah.
The normal thing that you would aim for, so that you were flexible.
Yeah. But your boxing training would be for strength and endurance,
wouldn't
it? Wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes. That was hard. Early mornings, 6:30. You go out on a 4 or 5 mile run with boots and heavy clothing and that, and come back, have a shower, or not a shower then, and then be ready for the first parade on the square about 8:30.
Yeah. Was there a standard routine working day during this period of basic training?
Yes. I think the value used to be at 6. We could go and get one man in the troop, or two men in the troop, would go down to the cookhouse. We'd get a mug of tea, and then we'd bring it back to the bathroom, and we'd take turns in getting a mug of tea for
everybody.
And breakfast used to be about 7.
After first parade?
Yeah.
You'd muster then first parade.
Yeah, first parade. And then you'd breakfast might have been a bit later, it might have been 7. Quarter past 7 perhaps, whereas the normal porridge or bacon or egg and all sort of things. Greasy looking. Yeah, but the food was reasonable. I mean, we used to eat it because we were young and we had an appetite, so everything used to go. And then you would go for your first parade, your parade in your best kit for the square. And you'd say do an hour on the square. Then you'd do probably something else. Can't remember the order. Then you'd do the gym. And then there'd be a break about 10:30 to 11 where you could go into nappy or coffee and whatever.
The nappy break.
The nappy break. Because whilst you were doing this, you weren't touching the armoured cars.
No, this was all pre-armoured car, wasn't it?
All the basic training. So,
And what time would the working day end normally?
4 o'clock. So it wasn't too bad, really.
And after that, you'd be.
You were free. So unless in the evenings, if you hadn't passed your education, you'd be doing education.
Extra education.
Yeah.
What did you do? I mean, you were doing a lot of sport. Did you? What were the popular recreations? was everybody involved in sport?
Yes, all those football,
off duty.
There was hockey, cricket, and rugby. Mm. They had some very excellent sports grounds. And if you weren't actually taking part, you could go out and support.
Yeah.
All the normal sort of sports were going on. And so you get, say, A squadron would be playing B squadron football. A troop would be playing another troop. And that's the way they used to do it. It's competitive all the time. Mm.
Were you allowed out at all during your first 3 months?
Yes, not within the garrison. There used to be a garrison cinema.
Yes.
I think mostly we were busy inside cleaning our kit. Mm. For the next day, your boots had to be absolutely polished. And all your fuel and riches, they had to be blanketed in the...
On the inside.
And your belt had to be highly polished, so your brown leather belts, everything. And so we spent quite a long time polishing. Mm. And you would see on the beds everybody. All sitting around, he was be about 16 in the room. Mm. And they'd all be busy shining on it.
What sort of building were you in? Was it a hut or a brick?
Building.
Barracks?
The barracks at Tidworth. Mm. The old army barracks, mm. And Kandahar barracks in Tidworth. And they were all right, but anything, then the barracks was situated, and then you come down some iron steps across the square about 50 yards to the bathhouse. That's the centre one for each squadron. There'd be one squadron in one block. A squadron would be in one, B, C, and RHQ in the square, and then the bathhouse would be in the middle.
That was the ablutions?
Yes.
Yes. So you'd have to go there for washing and shaving in the morning?
No, the washing was inside the...
Inside the barrack block?
Wash there, yes, but... If you wanted the bath, you had to go across there. Mm. And you could only go on certain days. You were allocated certain times in certain days. I think it's times more than days. If you wanted one every day, then you could, providing that was B squadron's
slot. Now, you mentioned in your basic training, obviously, learning how to dress yourself properly and get your turnout up to standard. Doing drill with lance and rifle. Sword drill, did you do any of that?
No.
No. Shooting, so basic weapon training.
Yes.
Education, so on. And no mention of any sort of tactical training, or did that come later?
No.
Not at that stage. So 3 months
solid
training, just
basic
soldierly skills. Okay. And you mentioned that you had the Lanchester armoured car as the basic equipment.
Yes.
So presumably you came on to that next in your progression through the system of training.
Yes. Well, there are two lines we could go on. Fortunately, when I joined, the signals operators were reduces of those as troop leaders operator and that sort of thing. Were carried out by Lord Gore signals.
Yes.
But I went on the first regimental wireless operators course, which was under the instruction of Lord Gore signals. And about 20 of us were selected to do this course.
Was that all recruits or recruits and others?
No, having passed out your basic training.
Yes.
It was mainly the recruits.
Right.
Some went on to what we used to call the D&M.
Driving and maintenance.
That's right. We went on radio. Mm. And it was a 9-month course. Very, very, very thorough.
Did you do that in the regiment or were you sent off?
Yeah, we all gathered together in one... Room.
In Tidworth.
Yeah. And we used to go across the barrack room to the Royal Corps signals where that barrack room was. The regimental Royal Corps signals. F troop they were. And we started Morse code procedure, voice procedure. And all that sort of thing. Helio, flag, lamp, semaphore. Canoe means of communication we did. Mainly in the back rooms to start with, and then out in the field.